Welcome to episode 5 of season 9 of Boomer a Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the last or two, or the final two Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today to finish off this week is Todd Liebenow of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We're driving through Camden.
We are. It's late at night. It's dark. We're driving through New Jersey.
Episode 5 begins with Farrell being dumbfounded and ends with John getting off the roof of the taxi. So we finished things yesterday in Camden. John had a little bit of a fight with a couple of circus performers. And somehow they both survived. And, you know, Farrell found out some very important information at the end of yesterday's episode about the fact that these guys were actually after him. You know, he doesn't yet understand why. We haven't put all the pieces together. We know, but you know, he hasn't figured it out yet. And this minute continues with the two of them in the car as Farrell just looks at John completely in shock about the fact that these guys were trying to kill them. And, you know, the car just drives on. You know, they do a nice, passing shot of the car, mm-hmm. Passing the camera, coming towards the camera and then passing it by and just driving down the road. And then the shot changes and we're back in Washington, D.C. And we can see the Capitol building. We see the Washington Monument. It's very dark. Obviously, it's still middle of the night there also. And then we see that we are at the FBI Department of Justice building.
Yep.
And we see a whole bunch of pictures, mugshots on the wall of a bunch of people that we haven't seen any of them before. You know, none of these guys were the guys that we came across at the beginning of this movie.
I've always wanted to know, you know, when we have pictures like this, who these people are, you know, like something in the back of my head always says, oh, these are people that were in the prop department or they, you know, work behind the scenes in some way, you know, and I just love the idea that, you know, a random person working on a movie, they get pulled aside and, you know, hey, we want to take a mugshot picture of you so you can show up on this bulletin board here in the movie. You know, I'd love to be that guy at some point.
Well, I guess you got to get a job on a movie set to do that, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, they don't make too many of those here in Colorado, so.
Yeah, well, they make even less by me, so, you know, you're in better shape than I am from that perspective, if you want to be a mugshot on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I mean, we know that they do that in a lot of movies. They did it in the Die Hard movies. I mean, in the first Die Hard, you know, we did get... you know, the names on the placard, you know, when Hans and John meet, you know, mm-hmm. that's how Hans knows the name, you know, to say his name is Bill Clay with the WM, you know, right. But when I went through that movie minute by minute, we talked about all the different names of people on the crew that were in that. So, yeah, they like to do these things here. I don't think that we know who these people are in the mugshots, though. You know, that's a little more difficult to try to find. Even IMDb doesn't talk about that. I did check it out. Going back to Saving Private Ryan, though, I remember that in the scene where Ryben, played by Ed Burns, is, you know, going through all the dog tags. So he starts throwing out names, and those are all names of friends of his.
Uh-huh.
The names of all the guys who apparently died, you know. Stuff like that.
It is fun though when like random pictures you can match them up, like, you know, every now and then you see one and you go, oh, I recognize that, that's the director or something like that, or, you know, sometimes it might even be a you know, an actor that just appears in small roles and things like that. My favorite is in White Christmas. Okay. So, you know, in White Christmas, who are the stars of White Christmas? Oh, for crying out loud, Fred Astaire,
Bing Crosby,
and Danny Kaye. They have a picture of this war buddy of theirs, and I forget his name. He's got some, you know, kind of unusual name, but you look at that picture and you go, oh my gosh, what, something's familiar about it. And it is Carl Switzer, who is best known as Alfalfa as an adult. So the guy that played Alfalfa as a kid in the Our Gang films is in this picture that they use in White Christmas as their long lost war buddy or whatever the context was. So I always love that you're just sitting there watching this movie and all of a sudden there's Alfalfa.
Okay, that's actually very interesting that you're saying that, because you know, I now have two connections to previous movies that I've done minute by minute that are connected to that. So the first one is, you know, in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you have the picture of Dell's wife, you know, John Candy's wife, yeah, who apparently mm-hmm. is someone who was just on the crew that they decided to take her picture and use it there. That was the first one. And the second one is actually from It's a Wonderful Life. Alfalfa is in It's yes. Wonderful Life.
Yes, yes, I forgot about that. Yeah.
He's the guy who opens up the pool underneath mm-hmm. him on the dance floor.
Yeah. There's a trivia question there. I should use that sometime. What two Christmas classics does Alfalfa appear in as an adult?
Yes.
White Christmas and It's a Wonderful Life.
That's true. Wow. Yeah, unfortunately, Alfalfa had a very... He was murdered.
Oh, he was. He had a lot of the Our Gang kids had troubled lives. But yeah, he, after doing various, you know, kind of struggling his way through doing small parts here and there, he eventually turned to, I think, dog breeding was his big thing. And he got into some argument with a guy over the sale of a dog. And the guy shot him, killed him.
Yeah.
it's unbelievable.
Seriously. Yep. So, yeah, we have no idea who these people are in the mugshots. No. Anyone out there listening that knows, please let us know. If it is you, you know, you can let us know that, oh, hey, it's me.
Maybe they were other little rascals. Who knows? Probably not.
Maybe.
Too young.
Yeah, apparently. Very true. Right. So then, we hear Bauman's voice again, and he goes, "We got 7 dead hackers so far, none of whom were high on our list. Collect the hard drives. Start sweeping them." Yes, sir.
Now, I got to throw this out here because this is something that always bugs me in these movies and in TV shows. They do this, but why on earth, when they have these, let's call it a command center, okay, for the FBI or the police or whoever it is, okay, they're there doing all kinds of work, whatnot, trying to get to the bottom of things. And always it's like, turn on the lights. Why are the rooms always so dark and things like that? What it always reminds me of is this TV series CSI, which I enjoyed that show. But my wife and I would always be like, why are they scoping around in the dark with their flashlights? Why don't they just turn on the lights? And I mean, the same way with this room, everything is like dark. You would think that it is not the best working environment for trying to, you know, get to the bottom of things. Just turn on the lights so everyone can see and focus better. And maybe you catch these guys. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. Maybe. maybe it's just the cinematographer wanted it. That's it.
I know.
They want to give us the feeling. They want us to get the feeling that this is not like Vegas, you know. So it's not all night long. Everything, you know, it's the middle of the night, and you want them to know that these guys are working through the night, trying to figure out why there are 7 dead hackers, you know. And that's it. Even though I believe there are probably more than 7 dead hackers, because you know, in the explosions that we saw, there were more than one person in all of that. Maybe they just haven't like gone through, the forensics yet. The CSI mm-hmm. guys haven't shown up yet.
Well, that's the thing. And if the CSI guys did show up, they'd be like, turn off the lights. We gotta shine our flashlights on things. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
And CSI always bugged me too, because they always had those transparent write-on boards, you know, where it's just like a glass pain and they writing on it. I'm like, who can actually see and read that? Get an actual write on board or a chalkboard even. I don't care. Just writing on a piece of glass, that's not effective.
Isn't it to be able to see it on both sides or something?
But then it would be backwards one way. I mean, come on.
Maybe.
It's just because it looks cool. I think it looks cool. So, yeah. It's not practical. It just looks cool.
Could be. And whatever. So we just get the, you know, half a minute of this going on. We see a shot, a picture of one of the buildings that was blown up. But that's really it. We don't really get much more out of it. And then the shot changes and we're back in Gabriel's lair. And we see the guys.
Well, Gabriel's lair also, the lights are very dim there. You know, they like that look too, I guess.
Apparently it's a universal feel. Yeah. In the Live Free or Die Hard / Die Hard 4.0 world, that's what everyone does. You know, if you're working with computers, you gotta have dim lights. You know, I think that's more.
Yeah. It's not good for your eyes, though. I mean,
no. And then we see the truck, and then the shot changes, and we're inside the truck, and we see Gabriel walk over to Trey, and he goes, "Trey, Matthew Farrell, find him for me." So do you have any idea who this actor is who plays Trey?
I do not.
Okay, so his name is Jonathan Sadowski. Born November 23rd, 1979, has 42 IMDb credits. Most of them are TV shows. And there is a TV show where he starred in for 18 episodes called Shit My Dad Says, which was with... Do you have any idea who the main actor was in that TV show?
Oh, I have a vague memory of this. I mean, I remember hearing the title, but I do not remember who the lead was.
William Shatner.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Now, also on IMDb, I found a very interesting piece of trivia about him, that he is a big fan of the Chicago Bears, right? Now, okay, that's a nice thing for someone like you from Chicago and stuff like that. But his brother was actually the director of college scouting for the Bears from 2005 to 2021.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it always helps, I guess, to be a fan of a team that your brother is, doing the scouting for.
As we're recording this, the NFL draft is going on, which I don't follow at all because I'm not a big football fan, but it's been big news here in Colorado because of the whole thing with Deion Sanders' son getting passed over several rounds. And, that's been big headlines here in Colorado this weekend.
Oh, wow. That's very cool. I know who Deion Sanders is, but that's about it. I'm not a football fan at all.
I'm not either. Though I got to admit, I did recently watch the movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner. Have you seen that movie?
Yes, that is a very fun movie.
I was amazed at how just enthralled I was with following this. And again, I'm someone that I do not follow football at all. I am not into football. I think the idea of the college draft being this big media circus is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard of. I mean, you're turning an event into picking teams. It's ridiculous. But that movie, I was so drawn in. I loved that movie.
Yes, I'm a big fan of that movie. It shows the wheeling and dealing and how it all works and stuff like that.
Ivan Reitman's last film.
Yeah. And then Trey responds on it. And then another one of the hackers that's standing by there, a guy by the name of Casper, says, "What's with all the guns?" And then Gabriel says to him, "Operational prudence. Think of them as hardware to your software." So the actor who plays Casper, his name
You're
is...
You're telling me he hasn't seen the guns at all up until this point?
Well, only now they're actually starting to deploy them, I guess. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe he was on shift at the time. You know,
maybe
who knows. The actor who plays Casper is named Andrew Friedman, who has 81 IMDb credits. Nothing really, stuck out for me from any of his credits. But I found two interesting bits of information about him. One is that he's the son of a man named Elliot Friedman, who is actually in the Frozen Foods Hall of Fame.
Okay. Okay.
So I tried doing a little bit of research on that and wasn't really able to find out much information besides the fact that his father, I think, passed away in like 2010 or 2011. And he had been an entrepreneur and, ran a bunch of companies that were dealing with frozen foods. And that was about as much as I was able to get out of it.
I want to go visit the Frozen Foods Hall of Fame. Is it like, do they have a museum? Is it something I can go get a postcard from? I want to know.
Maybe. now you have what to go check out for yourself, Todd.
Yeah, I'll make it a part of my next vacation, maybe.
That's right. That's right. And the second bit of trivia that I found out about him was much more interesting. He was actually part of the Groundlings for 12 years.
Ah, yes. The famous comedy troupe.
That's right. And they are a comedy troupe that are known for the idea of doing improv. Do you know when the Groundlings began?
Ooh, I do not. I mean, I would guess maybe in the 70s sometime.
You were correct. 1974. Mm-hmm. My birth year. It was formed by Gary Austin in LA, and the whole idea was that he wanted to open up the idea of improv.
It's kind of like the second city for LA. Yeah, exactly. In Chicago, we had the second city, so
that's right. Then they still have sessions and they still have people signing up, to do courses with them and stuff like that. So it's, they had 50 founding members of the company, and they had to pay $25 each to join. And they would develop material in workshops, and then they'd perform. They'd have like weekend shows where they would perform the stuff. But again, it was all improv, based on the mm-hmm. fact that the audience were able to, have them do certain things and stuff like that.
I'm thinking that I'm just going by memory here, but I want to say like Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, I think was born out of the Groundlings.
Yeah, he was.
And so like Phil Hartman, I think, was a part of the Groundlings.
Yes, he was.
Cassandra Peterson, who of course plays Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, I think came out of there as well.
Yeah. Wow, you're doing well so far. I mean, I got tons of names here, but still, yes.
John Lovitz, I think John Lovitz, maybe Groundlings.
Was Lovitz part of the Groundlings? No, he's not on this list.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry, he is.
Yes. I was gonna say, he's.
Yes.
He was the guy that kind of brought Hartman into SNL, and I wanted right. to say they met through the Groundlings, but I don't know.
Yeah, they did. All right, so here, I'll give you some of the other names of people that are familiar. Jennifer Coolidge was mm-hmm. part of it. Ben Falcone, or Falcone, who he's married to Melissa McCarthy. Will Ferrell, Will Forte, Anna Gasteyer, Kathy Griffin, Rachel Harris, Phil Hartman, Sandy Helberg. You know who Sandy Helberg is?
The name sounds familiar, but I can't place.
So he was in both Spaceballs and Up the Creek. And he is the father of one of the characters on The Big Bang Theory, or one of the actors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think his name is Simon Helberg. Is his son.
Right. He plays Wallowitz on The Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cheryl Hines. Jan Hooks. A lot of SNL people. Chris Kattan, Karen Killam, Lisa Kudrow, Phil Lamar, John Lovitz, Melissa McCarthy, Edie McClurg.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's right. Pat Morita, which that shocks me. Craig T. Nelson, Lorraine Newman.
Oh, wow.
Sherry O'Terry, Chris Parnell, Cassandra Peterson, as you mentioned. Paul Rubens, Maya Rudolph, Julia Sweeney, Kristen Wiig. So, I mean, they also have like a list of all the people that are now part of the troupe, but there's really nobody who really jumps out there. Jimmy Fallon was part of it, but he was not, he wasn't a full-fledged member, based on what I understand here. So was Daryl Hannah, Mariska Hargitay, Tim Matheson. Mariska
Hargitay.
Tim Matheson, Fletch. Conan O'Brien. who else is on this list here? Rita Wilson. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Tom Hanks.
Mrs. Tom Hanks. They people from the Groundlings have made movies. The most successful one was Bridesmaids, and with Melissa McCarthy, Maya Rudolph, Wendy McClendon Covey, which the movie was actually nominated for two Oscars. And that same year, Groundlings' Jim Rash and Nat Faxon won an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay for The Descendants.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, yeah. Very cool about the Groundlings. And then, the shot changes after we get this little bit of conversation between these guys and, Casper warning about the guns. I think that comment is more for us than for him.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. But I do think that Gabriel gives him a nice response, you know, by saying that it's, think of them as hardware to your software.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just not quite the type of thing, when you have the likes of Alan Rickman and Jeremy Irons in the past, that you get, they would have delivered a line like that in a much more memorable way. Yeah. That's just kind of going, okay, nice try, but.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I realize that. The shot changes and we are back in Washington, D.C. And we see a helicopter. So we get this helicopter with the N350SC as the tag for the helicopter. And I looked it up on the IMPDB, which is the Internet Movie Plane Database. And I learned something new today. That's right. I never knew about this either. I knew they had a car database. I didn't know they had and they have a weapons database. I did not know they had a plane database. And this same helicopter has been used in other movies. It's been used in Baby Driver, Cradle to the Grave, Doom 3, Geostorm, Get Smart, Live Free or Die Hard, Midnight Special, The Need for Speed, Next, Smoking Aces, Strange Wilderness, right? And The Amazing Spider-Man. So,
well, this helicopter has quite a resume.
Yes.
It's been a lot of movies.
Yes, it has. So it's very interesting. And we get to see them fly off into the sky. And then we get some panning shots of DC. We get to see the Capitol. We get to see all these patriotic flags, a flag rolling down off of one of the buildings. We see a kid running holding a flag.
I'm pretty sure the one with the flag kind of unfurling on the building, that was in the trailer. I want to say I remember that shot.
Makes sense. And then we hear the.
But I kind of wondered though, I wondered how many of these buildings are actually Washington, D.C. Because like I was trying to figure out, that shot with the kid running, and there's a small kind of box shaped building with columns in the background. It looks like the type of building you'd see in Washington, D.C. But I was like, I don't know what that building was. I tried to just do some basic searches and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I was like, is this just some random building in some other city? And they went, it looks like it could be in DC, so let's let's use it.
I have no idea. I didn't even think to look it up to see if I could figure out what the building is, because as you said, there really isn't any way to identify it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, didn't even try. But you get an A for the effort.
Okay, I appreciate it. I failed, but I still get a
little bit of points. And as we're seeing all these patriotic moments, we hear the radio announcer. You know, there's a radio on, and we hear, "Good morning, DC. It's shaping up to be a beautiful 4th of July weekend. If you've got any big plans, get started early because the traffic is ramping up. But here's another golden oldie from all the commuters out there." And then we start to hear a little bit of music in the background. But at the same time, John and Farrell start John hears the song and decides to raise the volume. I love how in movies they raise the volume, and they don't really raise the volume, but they make it seem as if he's raising the volume, where we hear it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we hear it. We do hear it a little more. Are you familiar with the song?
Oh, absolutely. It's Fortunate Son by CCR.
Right. That's right. And anyone who's been listening to any of these episodes so far, any of these five episodes so far, has heard it as the opening and ending, opening and closing themes of this season.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the Die Hard movies make good use of music, so this is another good one.
That's right. Thank you once again to David Brooks for doing the intro and outro music for us.
Now, I got to ask you, though, I mean, like, when I hear songs by CCR, Creedence Clearwater Revival,
mm-hmm.
my brain always goes back to a commercial that used to air on UHF stations when I was a kid, advertising a greatest hits collection of Creedence Clearwater Revival. It's like one of those things where, I don't think it was KTEL, but it was like the KTEL type of thing. And, they'd be like, it's the sound that earned them 16 gold records, and then, it's this, buy it now on 3 LPs or 2 cassette tapes type of thing. But I have this vivid memory of this greatest hits collection for Creedence Clearwater Revival that they would just play the commercial for over and over again while we were watching afternoon cartoons back in probably the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, I recall hearing it a lot also, but I couldn't tell you if it was, specifically, in the places that you're talking about, for a commercial. I know that there are commercials that have used it.
Yeah.
There was a Wrangler commercial that used it.
Okay.
Yeah, the Wrangler's jeans commercial. But couldn't take anything besides that from that perspective. But do you know when the song was released?
I'm not sure exactly. I want to say probably late 60s.
You were correct. October 69.
Uh-huh.
2 minutes and 18 seconds, the full song. And who is the songwriter?
John Fogerty, of course. I think he wrote all their stuff.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So it was released on their fourth album. And it was released beforehand as a single, with Down on the Corner on the flip side. And it became anti-war Vietnam movement anthem. And mm-hmm. was a symbol of counterculture opposition to executive power grabs, including opposition to the draft and solidarity with the soldiers fighting in Vietnam at the time. So a lot of movies and TV shows that deal with Vietnam have this, have this song playing at some point. It reached number 14 on the
US chart. I was just thinking about that. I was trying to remember, and I want to say, is this? I think they use it in the scene where we first see Forrest Gump and Bubba going to Vietnam. I think I'm pretty sure it's used in that scene.
And you are correct. Yes. That's what it's used in that movie. We'll get there. I'm gonna get to the list of movies that it's in.
Okay.
So the song, it apparently it wasn't inspired by any one event, but at the time Julie Nixon was dating David Eisenhower. And you'd hear about the son of the senator or that congressman who was given a deferment from the military or a choice position in the military. And this, they seemed privileged, and whether they liked it or not, these people were symbolic in the sense that they weren't being touched by what their parents were doing. They weren't being affected like the right. rest of us. That was more of their explanation as to, you know, why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of covered versions of it also, including the one by David Brooke, which hopefully he won't get sued for. U2 covered it. Bob Seger covered it. The Foo Fighters covered it. So the various movies that have used it is there is a animated movie from 1987 called Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night, which uses it.
Oh, really? Well, I've had that one kind of as a possibility for doing on Forgotten Film Cast at some point. I've never seen it.
There you go. Forrest Gump, as you mentioned, the Manchurian Candidate from 2004 has a cover of it with
Demi version
from Wyclef Jean. It's the opening track for the closing credits. Obviously, it's used in this movie. In the TV show Chuck, there's an episode where one of the characters sings it. It was used in the Peter Berg film Battleship. Suicide Squad uses it. There's a Family Guy episode that has it. They had a parody episode of anniversary specials, and they had Quagmire as a Vietnam vet in 73. And they played the song in the background. I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. There's and then you have the commercial by Wrangler that I mentioned before.
Okay.
So, yeah. So John and Farrell get into a little bit of an argument here. John turns up the music, and Farrell goes, What are you doing? What is that? And he goes, it's Creedence. Creedence. Creedence, Creedence Clearwater Revival, classic rock. And he goes, I don't know who it is. It's old rock. It doesn't make it classic. What sucked back then still sucks now. You don't like Creedence? This is like having a pine cone shoved in my ass. I have no idea what that means, and I'm not even going to try and understand
it. No. The less we know, the better.
Exactly. And then John just raises the music even more, and then Farrell goes, okay, really? Now that's mature. You know, come on, I'm cooperating with you. But it's a nice little moment between them. Once again, showing the age difference between them. You know, back in Diary with a Vengeance, the whole thing was the difference between John and Zeus in their personalities and in their perspectives on race and on crime and all those things. And here it's, you know, the generational difference between the two of them,
mm-hmm.
which right. I like the way they're, and then they show us the car driving with its hazard lights on. I don't know why. I don't know why they have another hazard light.
Because he doesn't have an actual police siren. So that's exactly. The way he's getting away with it.
Exactly. And then we see the helicopter flying again, trying to find these guys, and we hear them say, we're on a heading of 060, making another pass. And then we hear Gabriel go, listen up, everyone. Are we ready? And then Trey goes, transportation hubs are prepped and set. And then Gabriel says, begin stage one. I like the way that they show us the computer screen, Trey's computer screen. And, you know, he's putting in the password and all that stuff. Did you happen to notice? First of all, it says the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, MTA, right? But the right. MTA is in New York, not in D.C.
They're doing a bunch of
no, all at once.
They're multitasking.
I know, but in Washington, it's known as the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. So, yes. You know, it's just it's funny that, you know, it just says Metropolitan Transportation Authority, MTA. But so he has three different fields that he needs to fill in. You have the user, password, and employee ID. Now, the order of him putting this stuff in, he puts in the password, then he puts in the employee ID, and then he puts in the username. which you know, is just automatically being filled in, more or less, what it looks like. And both the user and the password are each 10 digits, and the employee ID is only 8, which, again, don't really know the difference between that, because it's not like it's even a security social security number or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then what we see them doing, they get in access, and then we see the traffic control center in Washington, D.C., you know, a whole bunch of, you know, these guys still working first thing in the morning. They see all these, you know, they're watching everything going on within the area. And then we see both Mai and Trey typing on their computers, and then Trey presses enter. And then we see all the screens go out in the you know, in the Transit Authority area. Again, it's very, very, it's nice editing the way that they do it, that we can see them, you know, back and forth.
The Transit Authority also in a dark office. Everybody likes the lights off in those places.
And then someone goes, "What? Nothing." And you know, they're all a little confused there as to what's really going on. You know, did someone you know, unplug us? And Trey's smiling, and they show us all these different traffic cameras, and he sees all these videos, and then the camera settles, you know, on traffic moving very slowly within Washington, D.C. And it turns out it's John and Farrell again. And then we hear the conversation where Farrell then says to John, "When's the last time you turned on the radio and listened to popular music? Just give me a decade. 70s, I'm guessing. Was Michael Jackson still black? Pearl Jam. I'll go back 10 years with you. 10 years. 20 years. The Cure. Nothing." And then John says, "It's called news radio. I want to see if your friends from Camden made the headlines." He goes, "Hold on. You listen to the news? You got a problem with the news now?" And then he goes,
"Yes."
"Ready for this? The news is completely manipulated. Everything you hear every single day is designed by corporate media to do one thing and one thing only, to keep you living in fear. Fear? Total fear. So you'll get out and spend money on things you probably don't even need, that you have six of. So advertisers keep buying ads on their stations. I'll tell you one more thing. I'll do this. I'll do this all day. I got days of data at home. If you don't believe me, I'll drop a bomb on you." And then John just gives him a look and he goes, "What?" He goes, "Shut up." Again, I love the bickering between the two of them. It's just, it works so well.
Yeah.
You know, it's extraneous, I mean, but it just still works well.
And the scary thing is, what he's saying doesn't come across as all that crazy anymore.
No, I wonder if in 2007, when people were watching this, you know, if we all thought at the time that there was truth in that, and we just thought he was a conspiracy theorist. And nowadays, you look at it and you're like,
yeah. No, I mean, I used to be a news radio type of guy. I listened to that type of stuff, and I can't do it. I can't do it anymore. I mean, my life is a much happier place, not hanging on everything that the news says. Okay. So.
That is definitely true and very fair. And then we get a shot of the traffic light where it goes green, orange, red, and then John stops at the intersection, you know, as Farrell is still talking to him about all this stuff. And then John, just like when he yells at him to shut up, you know, John just looks, and the cab next to them, we see through the window that the cab continues to drive. And as the cab is driving, it just gets swiped by I think it's a garbage truck. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Farrell says, "That's good. Be dismissive instead of," and then, you know, the taxi gets hit, and then the taxi hits them, and the glass is shattered and all that stuff. And then we get to watch Gabriel watching the camera, loving the fact that you know, that he's watching this this accident happening. You know, he obviously doesn't know that this particular one has John and Farrell in it, but he's, you know, he likes it. And then he looks up at the screen and we see a whole bunch of different cities. Did you notice any of the cities that are listed?
I didn't, but is it in this is it not till the next moment? I know they mentioned Chicago at some point. I think that's in the next
segment. In today's segment, we do have Chicago. It's Chicago is one of them. DC, LA, Atlanta, Georgia, New York City. They have some, we get to see a lot of gridlock and a lot of accidents and traffic lights, going nuts, and Trey just keeps pushing enter. He's having fun doing that.
No mention of any of our cities here in the Mountain Time Zone, because like I say, nobody cares about the Mountain Time Zone. So, Denver, forget it. Phoenix, no, we don't get mentioned.
Sure. It makes you wonder what time of day that, how early in the morning is this if they're playing around with LA and Washington and New York at the same time?
Well, the traffic in LA is always bad.
Oh, but, six in the morning?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Every time I've ever driven in LA, it's been a nightmare, no matter what time of day it was. But I did have a question again. Remember we were talking earlier about where is this little building with the columns? Is that really in Washington D.C. and such? And this was another moment because this scene is very much set at this unusual intersection where there's this large monument of some sort in the middle of it. And I was trying to figure out, where is this? What is this monument of? And I couldn't figure it out. I don't know if this is really Washington, D.C. or if this is somewhere else. But, it's awful big. It seemed strange that I couldn't figure out where it was.
Well, it's the intersection of Lexington and Calvert. Those are the streets. I didn't look up what's going on there. I knew that you can see the cross section. You can see it in the, in the video that they're watching. So you have Lexington and Calvert is actually, that's weird, it's in Baltimore.
Well, I was going to say, I thought they filmed parts of this in Baltimore. So I was kind of like, okay, maybe this isn't actually DC.
You would be right.
It is the Battle Monument, located in Battle Monument Square on North Calvert Street between East Fayette and East Lexington Streets in Baltimore, Maryland. So yes, this is Baltimore.
Right, so they're not in Washington yet.
No, oops. No. Or they at least want us to think they're that we're in Washington. I mean, the two cities are pretty close to each other.
But... was it an hour and a half drive, something like that, between them? Maybe a little less.
Something like that.
I've made the drive, but I don't remember how far it was.
Okay, so the Wikipedia page does say depictions in film, and it says the monument is erroneously depicted as being in Washington, D.C. in the 2007 film Live Free or Die Hard. So according to Wikipedia, they're trying to convince us that this is Washington.
Okay, and they would be right. Well, they do that a lot in movies.
So... And it looks like I'm doing all your work here, Rob. It's designed by Robert Mills. One second,
Todd, this is a joint project. You gotta.
I know, but you're always the one that I'm like, oh, Rob's gonna come up with this stuff. But it looks like this is the same guy who designed the Washington Monument.
Okay.
So
you gotta give him a little bit of credit, you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, that is a very good catch there. Doing this 5 minutes at a time instead of 1 minute at a time gives me less time to go into too much detail on things. So you got me on that one. 2 points for Todd there.
All right, I'll take them.
And then we're back in the air with the helicopter flying over DC, trying to find things that are going on. And then we see we're back in Gabriel's lair, seeing all the screens showing all the chaos on various streets and stuff like that, and Gabriel just loving it. And then we're back with John and Farrell, and you see all these people just getting out of their cars, trying to figure out what's going on. There's too much gridlock and accidents and stuff like that. And then we see,
which is what you should not be doing when you're in an accident. You're not supposed to get out of your car. Like, get out of your car, you know, the, and, you know, other cars start piling up and such, then you get wedged between other cars. So getting out of your car is not the smart thing to do when there's an accident.
Yeah, but it, it's in a movie, so therefore that's what you should be doing.
Yeah, yeah. Though, that actually, that brings to mind another thing, though, because, you know, the car that John is driving, you know, they get hit, not as bad as some, but they get hit, right? But there's no airbag deployment. And later on in the movie, airbags, you know, factor into to things a bit here. And I'm thinking, I don't know exactly what kind of car John is driving, but, you know, by this point, pretty much all cars were having airbags. They were pretty much mandatory at this point. So how come there's no airbag?
Maybe he disabled it because of the, he was afraid that the bullets that were heating up in the glove compartment, you know, might set off the airbags.
That's it. That's probably it.
See, there's always an answer for everything. There's a reason for it all.
Yeah.
And John then turns to Farrell and says, "You all right?" And he goes, "No, I'm not all right." He goes, "Well, just stay in the car. You'll be all right." And John,
see, that's the smart thing. Stay in the car.
Yeah, but he says that it's do as I say, not as I do, because then John gets out of the car. You know, taking all the, you know, like pushing all the glass off of his jacket. And then he walks over to the cab and goes, "Hey, man, hey, you all right? Don't move. Just call 911, all right?" "Okay."
Well, that's why he had to get out of the car, because it never would have occurred to anybody else to call 911. John had to get out and do it himself because, you know, why would anybody else ever imagine calling 911 themselves? No, you need a cop for that kind of stuff.
And then John.
Thank you, John McClane.
Of course. And then John stands on the top of his own car and looks around, taking it all in, trying to figure out what is really going on here. And he's a little confused, gotta say that. He shakes his head, trying to figure everything out. And starts working his way down off of the car. And that's how this minute ends. So, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute? Or these 5 minutes? Sorry. Wow, you see, I keep catching myself.
I know, it's hard habit to break. No, yeah, I think we hit it. I think we did pretty good there.
All right. Excellent. So, our segment today is Franchise Fever. So the idea here is for my guests to give their top five movie franchises that have at least four films in the franchise, because we've already done trilogies. So why don't you once again start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, number five. Mine are pretty boring choices, I'll say. Number five, I went with just the MCU in general. I think it's pretty cool. I love that, you know, we've got 30 some films in this series and they're all existing in the same continuity and all that. Four, I'm going to go with the Airport franchise, which is four films. I love the Airport movies. They are just such wacky fun. And then three would probably be Die Hard. Two, I'm going to go with Indiana Jones, even though I know some people don't like the later ones as much. Still, the first three are strong enough for me. And then Star Wars, of course, has got to be my first. It's the franchise that made me a movie fan in the first place.
All right. Excellent. All right. And the daily segment that we will be doing is, once again, we'll be playing the game State Your Motto. Okay. And this time, you have to guess the motto of the state of Iowa. Okay. So I will give you three choices once again. Remember, these are all real state mottos, but only one of them is Iowa. You have your first choice is "Our liberties we prize and our rights we will maintain." The second one is "United we stand, divided we fall." And the third one is "Equality before the law."
I really have no idea on this one. Driven through Iowa many, many times between Denver and Chicago.
That's why I chose it for you.
I mean, it's at least it's more interesting than Nebraska. I'll give it that. I will pick the third one again.
Equality before the law.
Yeah.
No, sorry, that's not Iowa.
Okay.
The answer.
You are not equal before the law in Iowa.
Iowa's motto is "Our liberties we prize and our rights we will maintain." The first one, the first choice.
Oh, the first one. I always move away from the first, the ones that are long like that, because I'm just like, that just doesn't fit on a bumper sticker very well.
But again, these are all real.
Yeah, no, I know.
It's on someone's bumper sticker.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So, Todd, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Todd Liebenow?
Of course. So the blog is at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. That's where you find links to my podcast, which is called The Forgotten Filmcast. You'll find me on X at Forgotten Films. Films is spelled with a Z. On Facebook, Letterboxd. I love following people on Letterboxd. So, yeah, that's where you'll find me.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email at movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on Facebook. So everyone, have a great weekend. And Todd and I will be back on Monday for another episode. But until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.